little over a year ago, there was a bad accident on 101. And the result of that was that Lisa Hanger has experienced over this past year what none of us really, really would ever want to experience ourselves. Essentially having to have what your left ankle reconstructed after what breaking some, 100 pieces. And she is here today, just a little over a year after that accident, and it is a delight to see you. And it's a reminder, God is full of miracles, and faith conquers all. So, Lisa, glad to see you this morning. Her name mentioned, Ruah Numa, that refers to breath. And, of course, it helps to have Ruah and Numa to be inspired. But what is the opposite of inspire, the word inspire? Anybody? What? Discourage. That's a great word. But actually, the word I have in mind is you have inspire or expire. Did you ever think of that? You are either inspired or you're about to be expired. And really, today's conversation about the Sabbath has to do how to be inspired when many, many folk in our society decide to maybe not be inspired and really hopefully not expired, but then to live toward the other end of the spectrum. Well, today's, what is this? Papers falling out and they aren't mine, thankfully. In any case, today's text comes from the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah, I'm sure, is probably one of the first books of the Bible that you think of when you think of the Bible, right, wrong. Ezra and Nehemiah are the two books probably best known for having been written after the Babylonian exile. And the concern that they both share is that Israel will not fall back to its ways that led to the Babylonian exile, a time when the people of Israel were living not a life of inspiration, but expiration. And one of the ways they did this is they were forgetting the Sabbath. Well, Nehemiah sees Israel taking the same pattern that led to their exile, even though this is relatively briefly after the exile, the Babylonian exile, is over. They have decided to pick up their commercial and mercantile interest and to forget the Sabbath. In those days, I saw in Judah people treading wine presses on the Sabbath and bringing in heaps of grain and loading them on donkeys, and also wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I warned them at that time against selling food. Tyrians also who lived in the city brought in fish and all kinds of merchandise and sold them on the Sabbath to the people of Judah and in Jerusalem. Then I remonstrated with the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing that you are doing, profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your ancestors act in this way? And did not our God bring all this disaster upon us and on this city? Yet you bring more wrath on Israel by profaning the Sabbath." When it began to be dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut and gave orders that they should not be opened until after the Sabbath. And I set some of my servants over the gates to prevent any burden from being brought in on the Sabbath day. Then the merchants and sellers of all kinds of merchandise spent the night outside Jerusalem once or twice. But I warned them and I said to them, "Why do you spend the night in front of the wall? If you do so again, I will lay hands on you." That doesn't sound very pleasant. But from that time on, they did not come on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come and guard the gates to keep the Sabbath day holy. Remember this also in my favor, O my God, and spare me according to the greatness of your steadfast love. This is the word of the Lord. Let us pray. Oh, come to us, Lord, that we might be inspired and not pursue our own expiration date. Come and breathe deeply within us the calm and the peace that you intend for us, not only in resting on the Sabbath, but worshiping you as well. So come, Lord, lay your hands upon us that we may breathe again, that we may find peace for our lives, for our times, and for all our souls. Amen. One of the first rules of preaching imparted by that outstanding disciple preacher Fred Craddock is, never make yourself as a pastor or preacher the hero of the story. That's never been a problem for me, especially in regard to this, the fourth commandment, honoring the Sabbath. Because when it comes to taking time for Sabbath rest and Sabbath reflection, I'm about as big a sinner as anybody around. I'm not just talking about failing to take Fridays off, Friday being the day that Renee and I usually take off when we take it, because duty calls often to preside at a wedding rehearsal or a funeral. If you're a pastor, you don't have a choice about those kinds of situations. But even when I do have a choice, I work on my day off, to wit, just this past Friday, 2 days ago. So this morning, the number one person who needs to hear my sermon is me. Like a lot of folk, I put my shoulder to the wheel on what should be my day off. This is why I am preaching as much to myself today as I am to you. And I know myself well enough to know this has got to be a hard sermon for me to hear, let alone practice. But you know I have lots of company. Honoring the Sabbath by resting and reflecting on life's meaning through worship is something that a lot of folks don't do and often choose not to do. Take a letter to the editor that was sent in to the Denver Post when Renee and I were on our vacation. The writer had his nose all out of joint about Denver International Airport permitting Chick-fil-A to open a store on their premises. Now, if you know anything about Chick-fil-A, you know that its founder, Truett Cathy, a devout Christian, decided to close all Chick-fil-A stores across the United States in order to give his employees the freedom to honor the Sabbath. Cathy's policy harkens to what Renee mentioned a few moments ago, these blue laws, when only emergency workers, hospital workers, or police or firefighters were really permitted to work on the Sabbath day, the Christian Sabbath of Sunday. In objection to the city of Denver permitting Chick-fil-A to do business at DIA because the restaurant is closed on Sundays, the writer said, DIA has a requirement that business operates 7 days a week. This has been a rule since the airport opened, and regardless of the reason, we should not make special exceptions for one concessionaire. In a swift stroke of the pen, the writer ignored the 3,000-year-old rule of the fourth commandment to honor God with a day of rest and worship. But this writer isn't the only one to ignore the fourth commandment. As great Episcopal preacher Barbara Brown Taylor says, as best I can tell, most Christians follow 8 commandments, not 10. The second commandment, which is about worshiping false idols or making graven images, was dispatched at the Council of Nicaea in the year 787, when the church decided that graven images were okay and reasoned it should not displease God for us to have images of those persons who incarnated God in their lives. The fourth commandment, which is about keeping the Sabbath, has undergone a more gradual demise. When Jesus declared the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath, many of his followers deduced that they were free from Sabbath observance. Since the rabbis themselves had said as much, "The Sabbath has been given to you, you have not been given to the Sabbath," it seems more likely that Jesus was sharpening the disciples' sense of Sabbath as divine gift rather than as divine burden. In place of the fourth commandment, another writer says, we have fabricated an 11th commandment. Thou shalt not rest. Thou shalt not look back. Someone may be catching up. Thou shalt not produce less next year than you did this year, but produce more and more every year. Sound familiar? It's because we Americans are more pressed for time than people of any other nation on the face of the earth. According to one rabbi, the percentage of Americans who work 9 hours of overtime a week is up 6% since 1976. Americans work 70 hours more per year than the Japanese, who are renowned for their work ethic, and more than 350 hours than, of course, those slothful, lazy Europeans, especially the Spanish who take a siesta every day. And these numbers are still rising, with the effect that those who average more than 55 hours per week working over many decades are more likely to suffer a stroke. I know. I did. Today, workers lucky enough to have a job are fried. I have heard people say at their employment that they are now required to do two people's job rather than just one, and there seems no end to this line of thinking and working. People are expected to work longer hours and produce more than ever. In fact, if workers today had a mascot for all that they did, it would be the rat of the rat race or the hamster sprinting in a cage on their little wheel. And it isn't just time spent on the job that chews us up and spits us out. It's family obligations, household chores, upgrading our educations, and a whole raft of other demands placed upon our already harried lives. Furthermore, I don't have to tell you how we try to cope and escape such long hours of work. We immerse ourselves in our addictions in our society in what we sometimes call free time, such as our home improvement projects, our favorite sport in our child's teams, and their dance lessons. It's even said we worship our work, we work at our play, and we play at our worship. A number of years ago, we had a family of six children, a couple with six children in their home, part of our church. And all their children were under 10 years of age. I mean, my hat's off to them. Six children, all under 10 years of age. Wow. I mean, we know what our daughter, son-in-law, go through. And we just have to be 4 days with our twins who are five and our youngest granddaughter, three, and we're worn out. I don't know how you do it, six. One day the mother comes to me, tells me that she and her husband were constantly at each other's throats. Both worked full-time job to pay the bills, including their child care expenses. With a background in pastoral care and counseling, I thought, well, you know, what they ought to do is they need to go seek marriage counseling. And then I thought, wait a second. This couple's problem has less to do with their marriage than it has to do with sheer exhaustion. Each needed Sabbath time away from their children and Sabbath time together with just the two of them. They needed to go out for a date, for God's sake. Just the two of them. So I asked the mother, do you and your husband even ever take Sabbath time just to kick back and catch your breath? You should have seen the look on her face. It was as if I had just come up with a cure for the common cold. She knew it was true, that the best thing they could do for themselves, their marriage, and their family was to get some rest, to remember Sabbath time, and to put their kids in the church nursery and to worship in the privacy of their own lives, just to get perspective on their life. Slavery in this country was formally ended 150 years ago with the Emancipation Proclamation, but slavery still exists, friends. It doesn't come with shackles and whips. It comes in the form of our compulsion to succeed, to see our children achieve, to cover all our bases by giving maximum effort on our jobs, to keep relatives happy, to win every contest and every game we participate in. The sure sign of this slavery is stress. It is like we're slaves in Egypt, forced by Pharaoh to make more bricks. And make no mistake, God knows that Pharaoh was a tough boss. After 450 years in slavery, the Jews had gotten pretty good at making bricks to build Pharaoh's monuments to himself. So Pharaoh insisted the slaves make more bricks, which they did. This was before the Protestant work ethic. The Jews and slavery had it down to a T. But never one to be satisfied, Pharaoh demanded more and more bricks and a higher quota of more and more bricks. On and on it went until the slaves were dropping dead, completely exhausted. Well, we tend to think of the commandment to remember the Sabbath as just another rule God has come up with in order to help make our lives more miserable. We often read it through the lens of adolescent rebellion, no matter what our age. But something far different was going on when God gave Moses these commandments on Mount Sinai than to make people toe the line. God's fourth commandment to keep the Sabbath was God's political and economic indictment against Pharaoh. And in point of fact, the fourth commandment was really political and economic revolution. That's what God was asking for. This commandment of remembering the Sabbath was God's way of saying that your bodies, minds, and souls no longer belong to Pharaoh. They are mine. The Sabbath day is, as one of our professors called it, a day of enforced sloth. In order that people might stop long enough to contemplate their identity, their purpose for living, not as slaves, but in the glorious image of God. And yet everything we do in our work and in our play is frantic and frenetic. It's as if we are gerbils on a spinning wheel and rats in a race for our life. But the spinning wheel leaves us bored and forlorn and feeling like life is nothing but a dead end. As Ecclesiastes says in the Old Testament, he had to be an older guy to think this way, vanity of vanities, everything is vanity. There is nothing new under the sun. Just more of the same old, same old. That's the hamster wheel. Or ever felt like you can never keep up? I know I can't with technology, but you know, there's a whole swath of things where it's so hard to keep up. That's the rat race, when even the winner is a rat. I think this may be what Nehemiah has in mind when he warns Israel of reducing the Sabbath to practicing the same old merchandising and commerce the nation practices the other 6 days of the week. Life as a rat race leaves us with a kind of highway hypnosis, looking mindlessly at the road ahead of us, of thinking that life just boils down to birth, life, and death, of being hatched, matched, and dispatched. It's as if the hyphen between the date, the year of our birth, and the year of our death on our tombstone is just a bunch of years of nothing. Of nothing but being producers of goods for profit. Life on the gerbil wheel, representing in cyclical time, leaves us feeling as though we've always been there, done that, with our wheel spinning, never getting us anywhere. God gives us the Sabbath to remind us that life isn't about living as rodents in a rat race or on some hamster wheel. Those who refuse to take Sabbath time, and there are a lot of folk, a majority of folk who decide not to, who never look up to God and down to see the larger picture as if you're looking outside of an airplane window, turn up losing their identity as persons made in God's image. They may wish they could stop the world and get off, but they feel stuck without including Sabbath worship in their life when they ask those ultimate questions: why am I here? Who am I? What has God made me for? What is my purpose in life? For so many people, that's how the world ends. That's how the world ends. Not with a bang, but with a whimper. You see the life of Sabbath rest and Sabbath worship actually permits us, if for a brief time, to stop the world. Not to get off of it, but to experience the joy that God has in mind for all of us. When we devote ourselves to endless brickmaking, endless consumption, endless responsibility, and endless so-called entertainment in our search for real happiness, we miss the mark. We miss the mark because these things can never truly permit us time to count our blessings, to see God's big picture, and to overcome despair with God's unconquerable hope. Sabbath rest and Sabbath worship permit us to experience, if ever so briefly, what the Apostle Paul calls the fullness of time in his letter to the Romans. It is likened to the joy of a woman at childbirth who is able to put that pain of labor behind her and experience the full joy of bringing a child into the world. Sabbath time permits us to appreciate all that God has made, including our own lives. No other time better represents Sabbath time to me than our annual Christmas Eve service. What happens then? We are transported in time to Bethlehem. For an hour, we leave the world behind us. We sing of heavenly peace. And for a few precious moments, we find that we can breathe again, inspired, not expired. There's no rat race, no gerbil wheel, no more brick making, no more make-believe happiness. Nothing but calm and candlelight. This, you see, is heaven's time. This is Sabbath time. This is God's time. When we experience that thin place between heaven and earth. And this is when we truly can sleep in heavenly peace. This is the moment when the world stands still and we encounter, if but for a moment, heaven on earth. And this is why we practice weekly Sabbath rest and weekly Sabbath worship, so God may touch us into heavenly joy and peace with great news. Behold, I make all things new, including you. Do you now see it? do we now?